Hello, everybody. Welcome, patrons. This is the post-show video for Roleplay Live, Nebula Jazz. As you can see, it's live. We're here. So we're just going to hang out and chat a little bit about Nebula Jazz in general, about the live show. I want to start by... This is your first time at the IRL, the AFK table with us. I mean, we've played like in-person D&D before, but doing the whole like 8-hour live show. So how was it for you?
It flew by. Yeah. I didn't think that it was going to go by as quickly as it did. I was like, man, 8 hours, that's a long time. But then I think, well, when I was in college, we used to just like get together early in the morning and play D&D literally all day, right? So like, if it's fun, of course it's going to fly by. So yeah, it was great.
Yeah, yeah. I always find these shows to be, not just because it's 8 hours, but because like it's easier to get into them, and I find they go by more quickly, but as soon as they're over, like as soon as we're done here, I'm just going to like fall down.
Yeah,
we're going to be... Just melt into the floor.
We were talking about this before, but like Nebula Jazz is already kind of an exhausting show to do because we're all just so like active and in it, and like doing 8 hours of it is really fun and exhilarating, especially because everything was coming to a head here, but... Yeah, I know that the second we all get up, we're going to be like, I'm tired.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
You're constantly thinking about story versus you get combat moments whenever you're doing like D&D where you can just be like, oh, I know what move I'm going to do next.
Right.
Yeah. Here you're like, what am I going to do? Oh my God, we are doomed.
And we're only doing like a fraction of it compared to...
Yeah, well, yeah. I think with Fate Accelerated, the trick is that some of that work is offloaded, but also some of that effort. Like, you feel a little more tired at the end of the show because you're doing more constant work.
Yeah.
Paying attention is like a form of mental energy. Like, it takes presence.
Right? Yeah.
And so being able to, like, listen and wait for compels and, like, think about that stuff all the time, definitely more tiring. But I think it leads to... a game that feels more like we all built it together. Because sometimes with like D&D and with other games, it can feel like I made a cool thing. I'm going to like gently reel it out to you so you can see the cool thing, and I want to see how you react to the cool thing I made. Mm-hmm. But it's not like I'm not getting the same creative energy back. And this is like very much the opposite of that, where I'm like, people ask me all the time, like, oh, how do you prep for Nebula Jazz? Can you do like a prep stream for Nebula Jazz? And I'm like, my prep stream is nothing. I just nothing. I remind myself before every episode, I'm like, all right, where are all the NPCs? Where's the scepter?
Right.
Literally every note I have is like, where's the scepter? Who's got the scepter? And then what does everybody want? And then I just kind of let y'all go from there.
It did not go at all how I like pictured in my mind, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it was like I was like, I think this is where we might end up.
You had like a vision for
it
today.
Yeah. Well, like this is like how many possible ways can it go? And it's like, wait, it went completely even like whenever you brought out the things with Grandpa and how he's actually like, no, I want to end these guys too, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, the more the like weird mystery stuff and the more the like kind of historical like whatever comes up, all I really need to do is like know what the truth is, and then when you ask questions, I can answer it and to reveal more information for you guys to play off of. So I think we got a lot of that, right? This episode particularly was like, here's a bunch of answers to the questions you've been asking the whole time.
Well, I feel like it sort of like killed Aurora's anger afterward when she's like, oh, Grandpa's, wait, what? I'm less angry now.
So we do this thing, and this happened in Mirror Shades too. We do this thing where we'll start a show with one idea, right? Where we're like, it'll be like a space action, like Guardians of the Galaxy thing, and we're gonna do what we do and see what happens. And at the end, and we were talking about this on the second or third to last break, the show is really just about embracing your feelings. Like, it was about knowing yourself and embracing your feelings, and I thought that was really cool that developed for all the characters.
Yeah.
Like, as we play, like, we didn't plan on that being like a theme, but each character kind of had that tied in. So I thought that was really cool. And we saw a lot of that during this episode.
Mm.
Yeah, for sure.
Are we like trying to keep this spoiler free?
This? No.
So sorry that your first live show ended like that.
Why?
What?
No.
Well, so this was... We have
ZZ Gene. Thank you.
So this was the thing about that is that it wasn't... Like,
was it your idea?
It was her decision, right? Like,
yeah,
you
she
got
had to make
to choose.
The choice.
You got to choose how it went.
That was a compelling way to end.
I didn't know because she said she was going to send a note to Adam. I don't know if that was
something
that they arranged.
I gave a note to Adam.
Can we say what the notes are now?
Oh, yeah. So I gave a note to Adam that was basically just like, because I was thinking about what could have potentially happened to Eugene. And I was like, maybe like just his body is destructive now, right? Like, maybe he just like dissolves things.
Yeah.
And then Adam took it way like beyond that to like, yeah, maybe you're just consuming everything. I was like, all right, excellent. This is, yeah, this is the direction
well, yeah,
I wanted.
I mean, I was always curious about the origins of, so the, you know, the Alexaturnians and the Agarans and the Mingasians stuff, they, the scepter is this like divine kind of energy source, this weird primordial energy source. And so it got me thinking like, okay, how did the slime race get started in the first place? And like maybe an early experiment with some protozoa and one of these energy sources, like maybe that's what created the mother slime.
The mother,
so
yeah.
It's like, well, cool. Let's just. Also, I just like really like Akira. It's one of my favorite movies. Yeah, and yeah. I really wanted you to be a giant metamorphic slime creature that consumed
totally.
Your friends. So
yeah, and I also thought that it was cool that it added yet another barrier to getting the scepter.
Yeah.
Right? Like I tried to create a situation where it was like, I don't want this scepter to hurt anybody that I care about. Mm-hmm. And then it wound up being that like I was yet another issue in the way, you know?
Yeah.
That it like corrupted me so quickly. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really engaging. So like, yeah, I honestly, looking at it, I'm like, that was awesome. I think
that was great.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was very creative too, to have like just the bar, the safe place inside Eugene, and we all just happened to get transported when we went inside.
Right.
I always
really
have
cool.
a very Viking philosophy to tabletop. Like, like
you want
to
die in
a good death is his own reward.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
In tabletop games.
Well, I think we when we play tabletop games, we come at them from a place where we're used to seeing dying as like a failure, right? Like in D&D,
yeah.
if your character dies, it's usually not very dramatic.
Just
it's usually
video
like
games,
a goblin
right?
stabbed you in the face, you're dead. If you were better at this, you wouldn't have died. Mm. But
yeah.
in a game like Fate, it's not about like, cuz the characters can't die. There's nothing in the rules that says
they
that if you take all your stress and you get all your consequences, you are dead. It's just you're taken out, and it doesn't have to be like death. No one has to die. So making that a player choice, making that like this is a thing you have the option to do as an exit for this particular character, really empowers it, because then you're making that decision yourself, and it means something. It's not just like goblin ear stabbing.
And it goes into the story versus, well, now we're down to three people in this fight. Yeah. So
that's what I think Fate is more about than other role-playing games where you're rolling numbers to stab and do X, Y, and Z. Those, even though there's a story, it's more about your characters and leveling and getting a loot or whatever. And I think this is about solid storytelling at the end of the day.
Mm.
And so every choice that we make where, like, for example, sacrificing yourself, it's just a good story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's nice to see, like, all right, cool. Thumbs up.
Like using the last shred of like any decency to save your friends.
Right. I also like that if there is a season two, like you'll know there's this caustic, horrible planet out there somewhere that is technically like the last
two
bits
of them, because there's Mother Slime as well.
Yeah. There is, yeah.
So there's, who knows what could happen.
Now we're going to have more.
Plus, I mean,
we're going to have more random slime showing up.
And again, we set up so much stuff. There are... Every one of us has at least one arch nemesis still floating around the galaxy. Like, yeah.
I don't.
Somewhere the post.
I don't.
Whoa.
Killed mine.
Yeah. The post credit scene would be like Raoul and Nina and the deposed Empress, and they would all be sitting around just being like, "We gotta get these motherfuckers."
There's like a round table of like wronged people.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
From like a league of
you.
Villains. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Mine would probably be that lady that called the cops after I kidnapped what's her face? Remember
Dango,
the bodyguard?
Dango would have been yours, but yeah,
you murdered him.
So.
See,
murdered
I'm
Dango.
Better than
no.
all of you.
See, I thought
I got rid of mine.
Better's a relative term.
Mother.
Totally.
I got rid of mine.
Dango's mother has a seat in the council. She's out for revenge.
No, damn. It's the bodyguard that had a crush on me, remember?
You killed her boy.
Yeah, you killed her boy.
She's coming for you.
Does he even have a mother?
Hell hath no wrath like a mother's.
Everybody has a mom, all right?
Even magicians.
That's not true.
No fury. I got it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially magicians.
Oh, man. And she's like a witch or something.
They're
just something powerful.
Yeah. She's also a technomagus.
Oh, my God.
I don't like this idea anymore. Let's go back to, like, I don't have any.
Back up.
Yeah, so there was some, like, deeper kind of like setting and like lore stuff that we sort of touched on, but I liked being able to show it only as minor contextual elements, right? To be like, this is a thing that's true and relevant because of your current situation and what's happening now, rather than being like, you meet a strange old man who exposits to you for 45 minutes, right? Like only being able to only reveal the relevant stuff in the moment and not think that you're going to go the wrong direction, because there is no right direction. Like, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Especially in this game, because there's no prep. I have nothing that I'm not going to be like, yeah, but I spent 4 hours making this dungeon. So.
Right. So you're going to do
You walk to the front of the dungeon and you're like, nah, we don't want to go. Cool. Well, 10 feet away, you fall through the hole and you're in the dungeon now. I'm like, cool. We climb out. I'm like, awesome. Your rope breaks. Fuck you.
Do the dungeon.
Get on the railroad. So, in this, there's no tracks. There's no train. There's just a vast chaotic expanse, and I get pulled along.
That is obvious. That's what makes it harder too. Is sometimes when you're like, "Well, what are you gonna do?" And I'm like, "Oh no."
Yeah,
I don't know what I'm gonna do right now.
Well, and I think the thing that fixes that any game that is character focused versus say plot focused does well, like this, Burning Wheel does this as well, is make characters who are about things. Like you can't make a character that doesn't care about stuff. Mm-hmm. Like if anybody had tried to play a character who was like, I'm too tough and cool to give a fuck about whatever you give a fuck about, I would be like, great, you're going to be bored because you just get dragged along with everyone else.
I think that was a weakness of my character. It's not that she didn't care about things, but I think it's just that the direction of her wasn't as concrete as everybody else's. But I do think that Aurora definitely developed that throughout it, where she's like, oh, I do care about things. Oh, I'm not. Now I know I'm not a robot. Well, now I hate things, and like, and so that like having those emotions actually develop in the character throughout the whole series, even just having the barbecue is something that wasn't something Aurora would do.
Right.
And so it showed. I think it's true that like once I started to get her direction, I need to be more specific in my character next time.
I realized. Well, yeah. So here's
she
here's,
was. She,
I don't think. I don't think you do.
I wanted to be supporty and sort of just. I like going with where everyone else goes, so that way I know I won't butt heads.
Right.
And with her, like I know a big comment was, "Oh, she was so innocent. What did Pocket do to her?" And I'm like, "She's around murderers and thugs and thieves and greedy people and hitmen." And I'm "What happened to her?"
It's really interesting because she has a lot in common with a really popular swan song NPC, Pi, the like AI from the ship, who I played basically exactly the same way. I was like, you know, he's a robot. He doesn't have any sense of, they don't have any sense of morals for themselves, but they're imprinting on the crew. And as the crew gets more murdery, they're like, oh, I can just kill people for fun. Like, and it became like an imprinting thing. And I felt like you were doing some of that same stuff too. Which
Yeah. And I was like, it's natural that if you're around a bunch of con artists or murderers or thieves or whatever, that you might start picking up and say, oh, is this okay? Well, you're doing it, so I'm going to assume it's okay.
You have to adapt to survive as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I think there's this thing in role-playing where, again, like playing D&D, when you make a first-level wizard, you can look forward and be like, someday I'll be a second-level wizard,
right.
And then a third-level wizard, and eventually I'll be a tenth-level wizard if I don't die. You can see clearly the path ahead of you. But in a game like this, you make a character that's either something you don't really want to play the way they are and you want to watch them change, or they're like, this is a cool idea and I'm curious where I will end up. Because every time you get to a point of decision, the dice can move you in a different direction, or a player might like hook you and be like, I think this is cool. Come over here to this plot line and try doing it this way.
And if you're one of those people who are like, no, I won't do that. No, it's not fun.
But, yeah,
it's
but like
fun.
That's what compels
her for you. Yeah.
Compels like force you to negotiate.
That's why I feel like you can't have 100% set on, you can't be 100% set on this is my character.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Did I know I was going to be some synthomagus? No.
Yeah, well, there needs to be flexibility around, because you write your aspects to have them prompt your, they're almost as much for the other players as they are for you to say, like, here are some things that I think are interesting about my character. I hope you will also find them interesting and compel me using them.
It's right? Like it's the I love you scene. I wasn't going to do that. I was going to like stay cold and uncaring, and then you forced my character to like evolve that aspect of itself.
God, go back and watch the first episode. I think the characters we all set out to create, I know that I literally just wanted to be a big angry bruiser.
Yeah.
And next thing I know, I'm shouting into jars and like
right,
saving
it's
a
true.
Like Eugene was just like the scummiest slime ball in the world who ends up befriending a rock man, like crazy, like,
and
you
being the hero.
Yeah. I mean, we already know where you started from, where you ended up. Like, you became a like lovesick puppy. Like
I started off as like the like suave Han Solo who likes the ladies.
Yeah.
And then ended up being like the, I only care about the safety of my squad and I'm in love with a girl.
And I think because of the way this game plays, if this had been anything else, I still would be the hulking brute, except I'd have like plus six into punching now.
Right.
And right. And you'd have just more gold and you'd be a little bit cooler and suaver.
A little bit cooler, but still super edgy.
And you'd have like level 12.
And I'd still have Sparky.
Yeah. You'd be a hunter basically at this point.
Yeah.
Like, and we would just be down the same path, but because of the things that we had to do and the choices we made, we ended up in a totally different direction.
I think that's the unstated power of the compel, right? Is that you make your characters with the understanding that they're only like 70% your character, right? Well, you don't have the same authorial protection over your character that you would in another game. In any role-playing game, like, it doesn't matter what game you're playing, someone can suggest, hey, it would be cool if your character did this, but you can be like, yeah, this is my character. I have authority over them. Thanks for the suggestion. Thanks for the suggestion, but I'm not going to do that. But in this game, there's mechanics that say, like, all right, some percentage of your character belongs to the table. And when someone pulls you in that direction, you can make it a temporary detour, right? You can be like, yeah, that's interesting in the moment. And then I'm going to veer back to the way that I want to play it.
Or you let the table mold.
Yeah. Or you're like, wait, that's a really good idea. I'm going to veer in that direction. And in that way, you can develop a character that maybe feels less like your particular little baby and more like all the characters belong to each other.
The thing I love about Dave is Dave is 100% table character. Like, everyone at the table has at some point put input in or influenced Dave to shape him to how he was at the end.
Yeah. So one thing that I would like to see more of, if we do like a season two and we want to do more Fate Accelerated, I would love to see more of you guys getting to know the aspects of the NPCs and compelling me to do things with them.
And not just nearly enough.
Which is, I mean, it's a skill. It takes time to like practice and remember you can do that, but learning their, like, it's just as easy where if you want an NPC to do something, you can compel. You can be like, oh, I think it would be interesting and in character for Jack to do this. Or like, because Jack has, I like my alone time, maybe I'm going to compel him to be alone when I sneak up on him, right? So you can use it both tactically and narratively.
The thing I found difficult was discovering the NPC's like aspects by using the approaches that I was strong at.
Right.
Because
right.
those two, like
being quick.
Like, my specialty is quick. Like, how do I discover an aspect about my opponent using quick?
And I mean,
like,
you
do
can
it quickly. Like, it doesn't.
No, got it.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And so that would lead me to, like, pull back from that area of the game.
And I think you could make a character, if someone were interested in exploring that mechanical aspect of the game, you could make a character that focused on, say,
if you
careful
remember,
and
though,
sneaky.
I did that. If you remember, when I had Sparky, I'd be like, I did it with Slipknot. I was like, I want to scan the guy and see if he has a weakness. And that's when we found out about the eye. And
that
then I hacked into the eye.
That was the very first one. Yeah.
And then I lost Sparky. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I'm going to be doing this
but
much more.
I think, again, in context of the game, you know, we're acting through the paradigm of the characters in the game. And these characters, they're good at having emotions, but they're not great at picking up on each other's emotions so much. But you could very easily play a character that was more receptive. I mean, you can make an alien that can feel other people's feelings. You can have an aspect that's like my mind to your mind, right? Like, where you can pick up on that stuff. And that's a leverage point into that part of the game. As we've seen, the game works even if we don't really hit on that. But for me as a GM, I would be interested in having your control over the narrative be even stronger by pulling NPCs in various directions, by compelling them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, which I think is cool. Something for next time.
You know what? Just as another thing that I think is kind of cool about continuing this specific world, if we did, is that we would probably see Mengasi just like as nobodies, right?
Yeah.
We would see Mengasi just like trying to live normal lives.
Like
the ones that
really
like the lizard people. Yeah, like the ones that remain. Yeah. So
Mengasi
would
be.
Everyone hates a Mengasi. Right. Oh my God.
I mean, the thing would be that, you know, depending how far ahead it would be set, like now, because there's these trillions of, there are entire planets that are just abandoned, right? Like, their people all just died and turned to dust, and now everybody else is like, cool, we should just move in. And so there's all these weird like ships that get scavenged. Like, it's a very different universe once you basically just take the predominant.
It's going to become an outlaw's paradise.
Right. The predominant species has been taken off the top of the food chain and discarded. And
Rex
now
is at the top.
King Rex
in a time.
Right. Yeah.
Daring so outlaw shark.
And as you say that, Dave hands you a burger.
Yeah. Your burger, my liege. So yeah, I think it's. I mean, it's an evolving universe, and like you said, when we came into the first episode, there are so many things now that we look at as being givens of Nebula Jazz, like things that are just we know this to be true about the universe. But they were just one-offs. They were compels or jokes or just remarks where I was like, all right, that dumb comment is canon now. I'm just going to write that down. Mm-hmm. And I love that stuff. I love being able to do that, to have contextually
when
generated.
Did you material. Decide what was going to happen to them in Ghazi? Was it like then there on the spot?
Like the scepter and it like killing them off and stuff? Yeah. Yeah, they pretty much like winged that. Like I had
like
an idea.
Like the prince is gone, the princess is sick. Hey,
yeah.
Guess what?
Yeah, yeah. That was a like, I'm sitting here on the break and I was like, all right, I'm going to veer it in that direction. Yeah. Yeah, like when we came into the episode, I've always known why the Mingasi wanted the scepter. I didn't really know why Aurora was special like at all, so I've just kind of like built that up over time, and then I figured out kind of like tying it all together in this.
Super like funny how like the original episode was we were framed for murder by the Mingasis and hunted by the Mingasis, and that like story plot like was completely gone by the end, and like the Mingasis aren't technically even royalty anymore; they're not in charge of anything, or maybe won't be. Mm-hmm. So it's
wait,
like,
so yeah,
what
are
that
there
whole
no Mingasi left?
Well, I mean, we don't know.
That's the thing, we don't really know. But also, like the first sort of uncontrolled pulse obviously made them all really sick.
Right.
And then the Duke wanted to get the scepter back because
so
maybe it would help them.
So basically, the reason she was special is because, Aurora was special is because she weakened them all.
Well, the
to make them attackable.
Like, so
this
the
empire of people.
The Alaxatronians basically like knew that Earth was going to get destroyed. Right. They had to. They were forced to help build this super weapon using the scepter. And so to try to like mitigate it or to get like make something better, they like got a bunch of human like kids and scooped them away. And then in the process found out that humans had this like innate power they could nurture. And so they had this like program, and the only person it ever worked on was Aurora. And so, yeah, there was a degree here. I was wondering about this because like the Alaxatronians wanted to just like wipe them out. They were like, yeah, they're a problem. We've run the calculations. They're bad for the universe. You're our super weapon. We need you to get rid of like trillions of them, like just all in one go. So I was curious if you were going to do it or not, because like it's pretty significant. There's a lot of innocent Mingasi that just got evaporated.
Right. Not even joking. Before he walked up and snapped his neck and he was like, you know, are you okay with killing trillions? I was literally just going to be like, yeah. And well, then just put it in.
And that was always the thing about Aurora was that balance between like the cold robotness, right? And then your human nature. And so I thought it was
I think that's like a time where like grandpa could just flicker on inside and just be like, yeah, I'm okay with that.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's robotness though. That's like,
right.
I think
that's the question.
It's ironically both cold and robot.
Human.
But also a very human thing to just be like, here's revenge for all my people.
Yeah,
revenge,
well, at the same time, it could just be like, really, you're going to tell me if I'm okay with that? Like, you're gonna ask me.
Right.
But
you're
like,
okay
not,
with
not
it?
Taking the high road is like a human,
it's a pretty human,
it's human behavior.
Yeah.
To be like, I'm going to be as petty as you were. And just like, yeah.
Well, and this is
and
the
I
thing,
like that.
It draws on this kind of like typical like trope in science fiction where the galaxy spanning or universe spanning empire is like, we just want to, you know, like bring stability and order to the universe by making it all part of one big empire. And I love that you brought in that bit at the end where you're like, listen, man, I've been there. Right, because we established really early on that Slynn was the thing that was around before the Mingasi kind of like grew up, and so you're like, yeah, it doesn't work. The thing about empires, they fall. Mm. I thought that was great. That was such a good like callback to the whole
too.
Thing.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm. So like the sort of like birth, and then the rebirth of the Empire of Slynn and kind of their future. Yeah, I think it was cool. The whole universe felt very dynamic, and I think that's a product of everybody kind of chipping in and suggesting ideas. And there's still so many little like places we could go. And
it definitely felt like the perfect place to end like a season or an arc. Like that's the kind of ending where you'd be like, man, like next episode is a completely fresh start.
Right. You're just sitting there for like 8 months or 9 months. You're just like, come on, I need another episode. Yeah. Let's go.
And just imagine if we had listened to Thuja in the first place, like, oh, fine here.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was about is Thuja is so nuts that it's like, we obviously can't trust this crazy person. Right. She's like, out of all the people, her craziness is like from a good place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it like took she was us the only one being genuine.
Trillions yeah. of dead people yeah. to learn.
I mean, to be fair, the Mingasi were, they weren't real nice either, right? Like they subjugated and destroyed and took over in the name of like building their own empire.
Well, I don't think you're going to appeal to, maybe Dave because he's high, but like Thuja and Aurora both being there and Aurora having seen very vividly
and
them
Quinn.
Destroy.
Yeah.
Having seen very vividly them destroy her planet, she's not going to be like, I'll give you guys a second chance. She's going to be like, no, fuck you guys. You can't do this ever again.
Mm. Yeah.
So, and I think that's more, she wouldn't, even if she weren't coming from revenge, she'd be like, I don't want you to do this to anyone else. And that's why she would end it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, because that was the thing. If you give.
So it doesn't have to come from a bad place.
What did you say, Pocket, right?
It doesn't have to come from a bad place.
Here's the thing. The Duke wanted the scepter, but we know these things to be true about the Duke and about the Mingasi in general, but that, like, he had the prince killed because the prince found out that it was possible to like hybridize the like dilute the species. He blew up the earth so that there wouldn't be any humans around
to
like
dilute the species.
Make more hybrids. They wanted the scepter both because he was like, it made us all sick, maybe we could cure ourselves, but also because they had an unpowered super weapon that they used to blow up the Agarans.
The minute we gave it to them, they would have a super weapon again.
Yeah, he'd be like, cool, all right, let's go blow up some more planets.
They basically had the Death Star.
Yeah, right. And so instead you used it for its original purpose, which only the Alaxatonians really knew. I feel bad for the Agarans because they were kind of everybody's tool, and then they got their planet blown up because they were mad that Earth got blown up.
But then, I mean,
that's how it goes.
It seems like kind of poetic that an Alaxatronian raised human saved them, or gave it back. Like, here, you can have it. I don't.
Well, and that was the thing, right? Is that like the reason Thuja was protecting the hybrid, the princess, is because she was half human, right?
Yeah.
And that the Agarans, like Earth, was sacred to them. It was a protectorate of their people. And then when the Mingasi blew it up, they were like, "Whoa, guys! Like you just exploded a sacred planet!" And they went to war with them. So she had like a loyalty to like you and to Dave that's like deeply culturally ingrained. So yeah, empowering
and
you to do that.
Rex.
Get revenge.
And to Rex. No, not by the end, not Rex.
I really liked how that relationship developed where like it was just kind of like weird violent sex at the beginning, but as you changed, she was like, the two of you developed a new relationship instead of just being like, cool, this isn't working anymore, I'm out.
Bye. Yeah. Mm.
Right? That it was like, maybe there's like a better way for us to be that doesn't involve us like trying to kill or have sex with each other all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. It was fun watching that relationship.
Maybe Adam will stop making me have sex with Thuja Mayhem. That's what I thought to myself.
Man, season two, I'm going to double the number of times. Hi, ladies.
No way, because he's going to be in love.
Yeah.
He's going to have little princess babies.
But the problem is what's going to be like, I can see Rex being a very tragic figure in the future where he's just like kind of gotten older and there's still no cure for the princess. And so like every day
she's
he just like comes home and just like, he's like, one day, baby. I'll bring you back, and she's just perfect and frozen forever, right? And like he's having to live through all this,
sad,
right?
No. Oh, I love the idea of women constantly hitting on him and him just not being like
totally,
never responding.
Yeah,
yeah.
He can't think of anyone else but.
There's
her.
Like a really dark spin-off comic, like Old Rex. He's just got a beard. And he's just like in a bar planet somewhere.
It's like it's Logan. Like,
yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm into it.
I was channeling Logan when we had that like whole. Like hiatus where I was gone for 6 months.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm coming back as like Logan Rex. And then immediately everyone was just like, no, we know where you are. Like we've been following you. And I was like, fuck.
Yeah, Eugene and we are both
cool.
Like,
yeah, I don't get to be Logan Rex anymore.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you everybody so much for coming in.
Thank you for putting it together.
It's absolutely a delight getting to play live with everybody. And Nebula Jazz has been a hell of a ride. So
you do it so fun.
Yeah, we'll figure out
Logan Rex.
We'll figure out the future. We'll figure out the future of Nebula Jazz.
I would love to just create a compendium of the world, the universe we've made this far, just to give to other people.
Yeah.
And be like, have fun with it.
Yeah, totally.
If you ever play like Fates.
Mm. Yeah. That's the thing that I'll probably do for this month's roleplay zine. I'll do like a chapter about like here's all the true shit about the plot of Nebula Jazz. If you are of a tier, check that out for sure.
Sweet.
Until next time, this has been Roleplay Live Nebula Jazz. Thanks for coming, everybody.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
Bye bye.
Bye y'all.